I left milk out for you, but I think one of the cats got it. The little man cocked one eye toward her, like a sparrow.
The Thistle Witch is waiting, Spike said. Hurry!
His tone of voice was odd, urgent, and strangely unfriendly. He had never talked to her that way before. Still, she obeyed out of familiarity. Same old room, same little friends coming in the middle of the night to take her to catch fireflies or pick sour cherries. She pulled a black sweater on over the white old lady nightgown her grandmother had loaned her to sleep in and kicked on her boots. Then she scanned the room for her coat, but it was just another black, soft pile in the dark, and she left it. The sweater was warm enough. Kay climbed out onto the roof. Why does she want to see me? Kay had always thought of the Thistle Witch as a crotchety aunt, someone who didn't like to play and who you could get in trouble with.
There's something she needs to tell you.
Can't you tell me? Kay said. She swung her legs off the edge of the roof while Spike scuttled down over the bark and Luti glided down on iridescent wings.
Come on, Spike said.
Kay pushed herself off the edge and dropped. The dry branches of a rhododendron bush scratched her legs as she landed, spry as a cat, on her 2 feet. They ran toward the street, Luti Lu dancing half in the air around Kay, whispering,
I missed you. I missed you.
This way, Spike said, needlessly.
Kay remembered the way. I missed you, too, Kay said to Luti, reaching out her hand to brush the light body. Luti felt slick as water, smooth as smoke. The glass swamp, so-called because of the abundance of broken bottles choking the little stream, ran beneath the road a half a mile down the street. They climbed down the steep bank, Kay's boots slipping in the mud. Beer bottles sat on rocks, some already smashed into big pieces. The thin rivulets of water shimmered with multicolor hues like a church window. What's happening? What's the matter? She called as quietly as she could and still have Spike hear her. Something was definitely wrong. He was hurrying along like he couldn't look her in the face. But then, maybe she was too old to be fun anymore. He didn't answer. Luti darted up to her, hair whipping the air like a banner of cream.
We have to hurry. Don't worry. It's good news. Good news.
Hush, Spike said.
The heavy growth close to the stream forced her to pick her way near the water's edge. Kay stepped carefully along the bank, darkness making it hard to see whether the next step would plunge her boot into cold water. They walked in silence while Kay tried to make out her path by the dim light of Luti's glow. A flash of white caught her eye. Cracked eggshells bobbed in the narrow stream. Kay stopped to watch the armada of shells, some small and spotted, others gleaming supermarket white. In the center of one, a spider scuttled from side to side, an unwilling captain. In another, a black pin anchored the center as the shell spun dizzily. Kay heard a chuckle.
Much can be divined from an eggshell, the Thistle Witch said.
Large black eyes peered out from the braided weeds and briars that covered her head like hair. She was sitting on the opposite side of the riverbank, her squat body covered in layers of drab cloth.
They have even caught us, the Thistle Witch went on, with the brewing of eggshells. Pride makes braggarts of even the wisest of the folk, so it is said.
Kay had always been a little afraid of her, but this time she felt nothing but relief. The Thistle Witch had kind eyes, and her scratchy voice was sweetly familiar. She was as unlike Reuben and his demon horse as anything could be. Hello, Kay said, not sure how to address her. When she was a child, most of the times she had spoken to the fairy had involved a splinter or a skinned knee or an apology for dragging one of her friends Ironside for a prank. Spike said you had something to tell me. The Thistle Witch regarded her for a long moment, as if taking her measure.
So much focus on the egg. It is life. It is food. It is answer to 100 riddles. But look at its shell. The secrets are writ on its walls. Secrets lie in the entrails of things, in the dregs.
The Thistle Witch poked a pin into either side of a tiny blue egg and put it to her lips. Her cheeks puffed out with air, and a trickle of clear, thick, snot-like liquid drizzled into a copper bowl in her lap. Kay looked at the eggshells, still bobbing down the stream. She didn't understand. What secrets did they hold, except a spider and a pin? The Thistle Witch tapped the damp earth beside her.
Would you see what I see, Kay? Sit beside me.
Kay looked for a dry patch and crossed the stream with an easy leap. A tiny being wearing a moleskin coat slithered onto the Thistle Witch's lap and poked its head inquisitively into the bowl.
Once there were two courts, the bright and the dark, the seely and the unseely, the folk of the air and the folk of the earth. They fought like a serpent devouring its own tail. But we kept from their affairs, kept to our hidden groves and underground streams, and they forgot us. Now they have made truce and remembered that rulers must have subjects. There is such a habit of service among us.
The Thistle Witch stroked the gleaming fur of the little fairy's coat absently as she spoke.
They have brought back the tithe, the sacrifice of a beautiful and talented mortal. In the Seely Court, they may steal away a poet to join their company, but the Unseely Court requires blood. In exchange, those who dwell in Unseely lands must bind themselves into service. Their service is hard, Kay. And their amusements are cruel. And now you have drawn their notice.
Because of Reuben?
Oh, do speak his name again, Spike hissed. Shall we invite the whole Unseely Court to afternoon tea while we're being daft? Hush,
the Thistle Witch soothed. Spike stomped his foot and looked away.
You mustn't even use their speaking names aloud,
the Thistle Witch told Kay.
The Unseely Court is terrible, terrible and dangerous. And of the Unseely Court, no knight is as feared as the one you spoke with. When the truce was made, each of the queens exchanged their best knights. He was the offering from the Seely Court. The queen sends him on the worst of her errands.
He is so unpredictable that even his queen cannot trust him. He's as likely to be kind as to kill you, Spike put in. He killed Gristle.
I know, Kay said. He told me. Spike looked at the Thistle Witch in surprise.
That's exactly what I mean. What perverse ovation of friendship is that?
How did he do it? Kay asked, half of her dreading the answer, but needing to know nonetheless. How did Gristle die? Lutie flitted to hover in front of her, tiny face mournful.
He was with me. We went to the knoll, the fairy hill. There was cowslip wine, and Gristle wanted me to help him filch a bottle. He was going to trade it for a pair of pretty boots from one of his hob friends. It was easy to find the way inside. There's a patch of grass that's all brown, and that's the door. We got the bottle, easy peasy, and were on our way out when we saw the cakes.
Cakes? Kay was baffled.
Beautiful white honey cakes heaped on a plate for the taking. Eat 'em and you get wiser, you know.
I don't think it works that way, Kay said.
Of course it does, Lutie Lou scolded. How else would it work?
Continuing, the tiny fairy gripped onto a thin twig and hung from a low bush as she spoke.
He swallowed 5 before they caught him.
Kay didn't point out that if these cakes were supposed to make him wiser, it should have occurred to him to stop after 1. It didn't make his death any less horrifying.
They probably would have let him go, but she needed a fox for her hunt. Since he stole the cakes, she said he was the perfect fox. Okay, it was awful. They had these dogs and horses, and they just rode him down. Reuben was the one that got him.
What is it with you fools and saying his name? Spike growled.
Kay shook her head. Reuben had killed Gristle for fun? Because he stole some food? And she'd helped the bastard. It made her skin crawl to think of the easy way she'd spoken with Reuben, the ways she had thought of him. She wondered what exactly could be done with a name, what sort of revenge she could really have. The Thistle Witch held out the little egg.
Come, Kay. Blow out the insides of the egg, and then break it open. There is a secret for you.
Kay took the little blue egg. It was so light that she was afraid it would break from the slight pressure of her hand. She knelt over the Thistle Witch's bowl and blew lightly into the pinhole of the egg. A viscous stream of albumen and yolk slithered from the other side, dropping into the bowl.
Now break it.
Kay pressed her thumb against the egg and the whole side of it collapsed, held together by a thin membrane. Spike and Lutie looked surprised, but the Thistle Witch just nodded. "I did it wrong," Kay said, and brushed the eggshells into the stream. Unlike the little boats, this egg was a shower of confetti on the water.
"Let me just speak another secret then, child, since this one eludes you. If you think on it, I'm sure that you'll admit there's something passing strange about you. A strangeness, not just of manner, but of something else. The scent of it, the spore of it, warns Ironsiders off, makes them wary and draws them in all the same."
Kay shook her head, not sure where this was going.
"Tell her a different secret," Spike warned. "This one will only make things harder."
"You are one of us,"
the Thistle Witch said to Kay, black eyes glittering like jewels. "What?" She'd heard what was said. She understood. She was just stalling for time for her brain to start working again. She could not seem to get a breath of air into her lungs. There were grades to impossible, levels, at least, of unreality, and each time Kay thought she was at the lowest level, the ground seemed to open up beneath her.
"Mortal girls are stupid and slow," Lutie said. "You don't have to pretend anymore."
She was shaking her head, but even as she did it, she knew it was true. It felt true. Unbalancing and rebalancing her world so neatly that she wondered how she didn't think of it before now. After all, why would only she be visited by fairies? Why would only she have magic she couldn't control? "Why didn't you tell me?" Kay demanded.
"Too chancy," Spike said.
"So why are you telling me now?"
"Because it is you who will be chosen for the tithe."
The Thistle Witch crossed her lanky arms serenely.
"And because it is your right to know."
Spike snorted. "What? But you said I'm not..." She stopped herself. Not one single intelligent comment had come out of her mouth all night, and she doubted that was likely to change.
"They figure you're human," Spike said. "And that's a good thing."
"Some crazy fairies want to kill me, and you think it's a good thing? Hey, I thought we were friends." Spike didn't even have the grace to smile at the weak joke. He was entirely wrapped up in his planning.
There is a knight from the Seelie Court. He can pull the glamour off you. It will look like the Unseelie Queen wanted to sacrifice one of our own. The sort of jest many would well believe of her.
Spike took a breath.
We need your help.
Kay bit her upper lip, running her teeth over it in deep concentration. I'm really confused right now. You guys know that, right?
If you help us, we'll be free, Luti said. 7 years of free.
So what's the difference between the Seelie Court and the Unseelie Court?
There are many, many courts, Seelie and Unseelie alike, but it is nearly always true that the Unseelie Courts are worse, and that the gentry of either court enjoy their rule over the commoners and still more, over the solitary fae. We, without ties to any courts, are at the mercy of whoever rules the lands to which we are tied.
So why don't you just leave?
Some of us cannot. The tree people, for instance. But for the others, where would we go? Another court might be harder than this one.
Why do the solitary fae trade their freedom for a human sacrifice?
Some do it for the blood, others for protection. The human sacrifice is a show of power, power that could force our obedience.
But won't they just take you back by force, then?
No. They must obey the agreement as we do. They are bound by its constraints. If the sacrifice is voided, then we are free for 7 years. None may command us.
Look, you guys, you know I'll help you. I'd help you do anything. The huge smile on Spike's face chased away all her former concern over his gruffness. He must have just been worried she'd say no. Luti flew around her happily, lifting up strands of her hair and either tangling or braiding them. Kay couldn't be sure. Kay took a deep breath and, ignoring Luti's ministrations, turned to the Thistle Witch. How did this happen? If I'm like you, how come I live with Ellen? The Thistle Witch looked into the river, her gaze following the wobbling egg boats.
Do you know what a changeling is? In ancient times, we usually left stock, bits of wood or dying fae, enchanted to look like a stolen babe and left in the cradle. It is rarely that we leave one of our own behind, but when we do, the child's fae nature becomes harder and harder to conceal as it grows. In the end, they all return to fairy.
But why? Not why do they return, but why me? Why leave me? Spike shook his head.
We don't know the answer to that, any more than we know why we were told to watch you.
It was staggering to Kay to realize that there might be another Kay Fiersch, the real Kay Fiersch, off somewhere in fairy. You said glamoured. Does that mean I don't look like this?
It's a very powerful glamour. Someone put it on to stay.
Spike nodded sagely. What do I really look like?
Well, you're a pixie, if that helps.
Spike scratched his head.
It usually means green.
Kay closed her eyes tightly, shaking her head. How can I see me?
I don't advise it, Spike said. Once you pull that thing off, no one we know can put it back on that good. Just let it be until Samhain. That's when the tithe is. Someone might figure out what you are if you go messing with your face.
Soon it'll be off for good, and you won't have to pretend to be mortal anymore if you don't want,
Luti chirped. If the glamour on me is so good, how did you know what I was? The Thistle Witch smiled.
Glamour is the stuff of illusion. But sometimes, if deftly woven, it can be more than a mere disguise. Fantastical pockets can actually hold baubles. An illusionary umbrella can protect one from the rain, and magical gold can remain gold, at least until the warmth of the magician's hand fades from the coins. The magic on you is the strongest I have seen, Kay. It protects you even from the touch of iron, which burns fairy flesh. I know you to be a pixie, because I saw you when you were very small, and we lived in Seely Lands. The queen herself asked us to look after you.
But why?
Who can tell the whims of queens?
What if I did want to remove the glamour? Kay insisted. The Thistle Witch took a step toward her.
The ways of removing fairy magic are many. A four-leaf clover, rowan berries, looking at yourself through a rock with a natural hole. It is your decision to make.
Kay took a deep breath. She needed to think. I'm going to go back to bed.
One more thing.
The Thistle Witch said as Kay rose from the bank and dusted off the backs of her thighs.
Heed the warning of your shattered eggshell. Where you go, chaos and discord will follow.
What does that mean? The Thistle Witch smiled.
Time will tell. It always does.
Kay stood on the lawn of her grandmother's house. It was dark except for the silvery moon, the moon that didn't seem anthropomorphic anymore, just a cold rock glowing with reflected light. It was the bare trees that looked alive, their twisted branches, sharp arrows that might pierce her heart. Still, she could not go inside the house. She sat in the dew-damp grass and ripped up clumps of it, tossing them in the air and feeling vaguely guilty about it. Some gnome ought to pop out of the tree and scold her for torturing the lawn. A pixie. The word sounded so frolicky. It made her smile, though, to think of being magical, of having wings like Luti. Her stomach clenched when she thought about her mother, though. Her mother, whose head she'd fished out of toilets, who dragged them from apartment to apartment and from bar to bar following some distant dream. Her mother, who once broke one of Kay's favorite LPs because she was sick of listening to that talentless whore. Her mother, who had never told her she was weird, had always encouraged her to think for herself, stood up for her, and never, ever told her that she was a liar. What would her mother think if she realized that her daughter wasn't the girl she'd lived with for 16 years? No, Ellen's baby had been boosted by quick-fingered elves. It was just too fucked up to dwell on. And if she wasn't Kay Fiersch, freaky human girl, then what was she? She knew that they didn't want her to mess up the plan for Halloween, but right now, she just wanted to see what she looked like. There were patches of clover on the lawn. Leaning into the patch of brown, half-dead clover, she spread her fingers out and searched. There were so many. Even in autumn, there had to be one with four leaves. It was slow going in the dark, and yet none of the clover she dug through had more or less than three leaves. She was getting desperate enough to tear one of the heart-shaped leaves down the middle and find out whether this magic stuff was more symbolic or literal. Still, it wasn't like she had to find it. She only had to touch it. Oh, that was too stupid. That could never work. Even if it did work, it was still stupid. Kay spread herself out on the ground, hoping no cars were driving by at this hour. Then she rolled over the patch of clover. The ground was cold, the dew dusted with frost. She rolled dizzily, holding her arms above her head. She had to laugh as she did it. The whole thing was absurd, and it was making her damp and really, really cold. But there was something in the smell of the earth and the touch of the grass that enervated her. Her laughter spun up out of her mouth in warm gusts of breath. She didn't feel changed, but she did feel better. She was grinning like a fool, anxiety put to rest by silliness. Lying back, Kay tried to imagine herself as a fairy, all sparkly with hair that was always blowing in the breeze. The only image she could summon up, however, was that of a pale green face she had thought she'd seen as she was leaving the diner bathroom. She could remember it in such detail that it felt less real than a memory. Perhaps it was something from a movie. Kay rolled over to get up and go inside when she noticed that a piece of skin on her hand was loose. When she touched it with a tentative finger, it sloughed off like a sunburn, revealing tender, green skin. Kay licked her finger and tried to rub off the pigment. It didn't come off. The area only spread wider. Her hand tasted like dirt. Kay stopped moving. She was scared. Scared, sick with scared, but calm, too. Calm as nothing. "Get a grip," she told herself. "You wanted to see this." Her eyes itched, and she rubbed her knuckle bones over them. Something came off against her fingers. It felt like a contact lens, but when she looked down, she saw that it was skin and that with the rubbing, even more skin had come off her hands. As she looked up, it seemed that the whole world had grown brighter, shimmering with light. Colors danced along the grass. The brown of the trees was many-hued, the wrinkles of shadows deep as newly turned secrets and beautiful. She spread her arms as wide as they would go. She could smell the pungent green of the grass she stamped as she rose. She could smell the sharp chill of the air as she spun, full of car exhaust, of crumpled leaves, of smoke from some distant leaf pile burning. She could smell the rot of desiccated wood, the spoilage of the hordes that ants piled away for winter. She could hear the churning of termites, the whine of electricity in the house, the wind rustling 1,000 paper-dry leaves. She could taste chemicals in the air. Iron, smoke, other things she had no names for. They played over her tongue in dark harmony. It was too much. It was overwhelming. There were so many sensations buffeting her, too many for her to filter out. She couldn't go inside the house like this. But right now she wanted to. She wanted to burrow under her blankets and wait for all-forgiving dawn. She wasn't ready for this. It had been a whim, her curiosity. What did she really look like? She should go back now, back to the swamp, confess all, and let the Thistle Witch explain what she'd just done to herself. Kay forced herself to take a few quick breaths without thinking what they tasted like. She was fine. Better than fine. She was fucking supernatural. All she had to do was walk back to the swamp and not touch any of her skin on the way. But once she started, she knew she couldn't walk. She was running, running through the backyards of houses, hearing dogs barking and her legs wet from unmowed grass, running through a parking lot, mostly empty, where a boy pushing carts stopped to look at her, and into the lot behind, and the sweet reek of trash where she stopped, panting, and held her sides. There it was, the thin disguise of trees and the small river that flowed through it. "Spike! Ludi!" Kay called, frightened by the breathless gasp of her own voice. "Please!" Nothing answered her but silence. Kay staggered down the hill, her boots sinking in the mud. The eggshells were gone. There was only the stink of stagnant water. The shattered bottles shimmered like jagged jewels through her new eyes. She stopped, awed by the beauty. "Please, Ludi? Someone..." No one answered. Kay sat down in the cold mud. She could wait. She would have to wait. Kay stretched and turned. The leaves over her shifted and blew with the morning wind. Drops of cold water tapped her cheek, then her arm, then the lid of her one eye. Kay sat up. Her eyes felt hard and her lips were sore and swollen. There was a green sheen to Kay's skin when she turned her arm against the light. Her fingers seemed too long and curled fluidly with a new fourth joint, coiling like snails when she made a fist. She brought up her other hand, where the skin had come loose last night. Beneath it, Her skin was a dusky emerald. No one had come. Another droplet spattered her bare leg, and she jerked upright. Her nightgown was filthy, and she was shivering even under her sweater. Biting back tears, Kay folded her arms around herself and started walking. She couldn't go home. Not yet. Not when she knew she wasn't the girl who belonged there. But she had to get out of the rain. At least Janet couldn't call her a liar this time. She stopped in a parking lot and twisted the side mirror of a car toward her so that she could see her profile. Her hair was matted in a nimbus of twigs, wet with dew, and she saw that her skin was shadowed with the lush dark green of moss. Not a stain, but a tint, as though a veil of green lay over her. Her ear was longer, sticking up through her hair to the top of her head. Her cheek, sunken and sharp, and her eye, slanted and black, all shiny black, with a pinpoint of white pupil, like a bird eye or a single bead. She reached up and touched her face. The skin tore easily, revealing a strip of grass-green skin. Her hand hit the mirror, spiderwebbing the glass and surprising her. Ignoring the pain in her wrist and the damp burn of blood on her knuckles, she started to run. Corny squinted. A girl in green makeup ran across the street and under the awning of the gas station. She looked up, and he thought he recognized her, but when she got closer, he wasn't so sure. "I was going to Janet's," she said, sounding just like Kay. "But I just remembered she's at school." Up close, the girl didn't look anything like Kay. She didn't look anything like anybody. Her upturned eyes were black as oil spills. She was too thin. Tall ears parted her tangled hair on either side of her head. Her skin seemed to be flaking, showing patches of green underneath. "Kay?" Corny asked. The girl smiled at him, but her smile was too fierce. The skin tore on her lower lip. He was frozen, staring at her. She scooted past him into the office, stretching her twig-like fingers. He stifled a whimper, trying to keep his eyes focused on the credit card unit, the dirty papers, the laminated nude air freshener, all familiar things. He could smell her, a weird combination of pine needles, moss, and leaf piles. It was making him dizzy. She sat down on the floor on top of papers and fast food boxes. "What the hell happened to you?" Kay held out her hand and tilted it slightly in the light. "I'm sick," she said. "I'm really sick." He crouched down and looked at her again. There was a luminescence to her skin, a kind of brightness about her that made her eyes glitter feverishly. There was something about her shape itself that was strange, a hunching of the shoulders, a slight bulge of the back. He picked up a block of wood with a dangling key. "Let's go in the bathroom. The light's better, and you can wash more of this crap off." She got up off the floor. "I could take you over to the hospital," he said. She didn't reply, and he didn't pursue it. He knew this wasn't a hospital-type thing. He just felt like he ought to say it. The bathroom was grimy. Corny certainly couldn't recall anyone doing more than changing the toilet paper in all the time he had worked there. The once white tiles were cracked and grayed. There was barely enough room for two people, but Kay squeezed in obediently next to the toilet and stripped off her sweater. "Take off the rest of it. There's something on your back." She threw a considering look at him and seemed to decide either he didn't care or she didn't. She kicked off her boots, pulled off the sweater and then the nightgown until she was only in her panties. Bunching up her nightgown under the faucet, he got it sopping wet. He used the cloth to scrub off what was left of her skin and the pigment of her hair. Her skin was thin as crepe on her back. As he rubbed the cloth over the bump between her shoulders, the skin cracked. A thin, whitish fluid leaked out between her shoulder blades. "Ugh!" Corny moved back from her. Kay looked back at him, and her face said that she just couldn't take any more weirdness. Of course, it was hard to know whether he was reading her strange eyes right.
It's okay, he said in as soothing a voice as he could.
Outside, he heard a car pull into the gas station. He ignored it.
What happened?
There was something moving under the surface of her back, something slick and iridescent.
Hold on, he said.
The thick fluid was wiping off, showing white-veined iridescence all the way down her back. Suddenly, something flicked loose, rising so that it almost slapped Corny before it fell wetly against her back.
Oh, God, Corny said. You have wings.
The damp things moved feebly. The sight of it sent a thrill through him, despite the fear. This was the real thing.
Come on, he said. My house.
6. Down the hill I went, and then I forgot the ways of men. For night scents, heady and damp and cool, wakened ecstasy in me. Sarah Teasdale, August Moonrise, Flame and Shadow. Kay sat down gingerly at the edge of the couch, so that her new wings hung off the edge and wouldn't get crushed if she moved suddenly or leaned back. She was wearing a pair of Corny's jeans, belted and rolled at the cuffs, and a black hooded sweatshirt. Corny had taken a pair of scissors and cut a large section out of the back of it so that they could feed her wings through. Her skin was so sensitive that she imagined she could feel particles as they drifted through the air. Corny poured himself a glass of Mountain Dew.
Can you drink soda?
I think so, Kay said. I could before. He poured some in a mug and handed it over to her. She didn't sip it. It was the same color as her skin. She could smell the soda, smell the green dyes and the chemical carbonation. She could smell Corny, the acid of his excited sweating and sourness of his breath. The air she breathed tasted of cigarettes and cats and plastic and iron in a way she had never noticed before. It nearly made her gag with each breath.
It's starting to sink in, Corny said. I can almost look at you without wanting to bang my head against the wall.
I'm not sure how to explain. It started a long time ago. I'm not sure I remember important things.
Recently, then.
Corny sat down on the couch. He was staring at her with what looked like a combination of fascination and repulsion.
I rolled in some clover.
She gave a short laugh at the absurdity of it.
Why?
Corny didn't laugh at all. He was totally serious.
Because the Thistle Witch told me that that was one of the ways I could see myself the way I really am.
See? I told you that it gets ridiculous.
This is the way you really are, then?
Kay nodded carefully.
I guess so.
And this Thimble Witch, who is she?
Thistle Witch,
Kay corrected. And she told him. Told him how she'd known fairies for as long as she could remember, how Spike would perch on the footboard of her bed when she was small and tell her stories about goblins and giants, while Lootie darted around the room like a manic nightlight. She told him how Gristle taught her how to make a piercing whistle with a blade of grass, and described the Thistle Witch divining with eggshells. All the while, Corny stared with greedy eyes.
Who knew about these friends?
Kay shrugged.
My mom? My grandmother? I guess I'm not really related to them at all.
She stopped suddenly. Her voice sounded unsteady, even to herself, and she took a deep breath.
Everyone in my first grade class?
You?
Janet?
Did any of these people see the fairies? Ever?
Kay shook her head. Corny turned his gaze toward the wall, frowning in concentration.
And you can't call them.
Kay shook her head again.
They find me when they want to. That's the way it always was. Right now, that's the problem. I can't stay like this, and I don't know how to get re-glamored. There isn't anywhere you can look? No, Kay said vehemently. I already told you, no. The swamp was the only place, and I was there all night. But you're a fairy, too. Don't you have any abilities? I don't know, Kay said, thinking of Kenny. That was definitely not something she really wanted to discuss right now. Her head hurt enough already. Can you cast any spells? I don't know, I don't know, I don't know. Can't you understand that I don't know anything at all? Come on in the back. Let's go online. They went into Corny's room, and he flicked on his computer. The screen went blue, and then his background picture loaded. It was a wizard hunched over a chess table while the two queen pieces battled, one all black and the other all white. Kay flopped onto the tangled sheets of his bed, stomach down, wings up. Corny tapped a few keys, and his modem groaned. Okay. F-A-E-R-I-E. Let's see. Gay stuff? Don't go there. She snickered anyway. Here we go. German changelings. Pictures. Yeats poetry. Apparently, I'm a pixie, Kay supplied. Click on the changeling thing, though. Interesting. He scrolled through it, and she tried to read it from her slightly too distant vantage point. What? Says you throw them in the fire to get your own kid back. That or stick a hot poker down their throats. Great. Next. Here we go. Pixie. Can detect good and evil. Hate orcs. And are about 1 to 2 feet tall. He started to laugh. Makes pixie dust. Orcs? Kay inquired. She shifted her position, suddenly aware that it was hard to separate which muscles caused her wings to twitch. They seemed to move independently of her will and of each other, like two soft insects alighting on her back. Corny couldn't stop laughing. Pixie dust! Like angels make angel dust. International drug cartels grab seraphim and shake 'em. Priests who sweep up churches put that stuff in Ziploc baggies. She snorted. You're an idiot, you know that? I try, he said, still laughing. Well, try Unseelie Court. A few clicks of his mouse and he said, Looks like that's where all the bad guys hang out in Fairyland. What does this have to do with you? There's this knight there who may or may not be wanting to kill me. My friends want me to pretend to be human because there's this thing called the tithe. It's complicated. Corny sat up again. Why didn't you tell me? I just told you the part that made sense. Okay. Corny nodded. Now tell me the part that doesn't make sense. I don't understand it all exactly, but basically there are solitary fairies and court fairies. Reuben is one of the court fairies, and I met him in the woods after he got shot. He's from the Unseelie Court. Okay. I'm still with you, if barely. Spike and Lutilu sent me an acorn message to tell me that he was dangerous. He killed my other friend, Gristle. An acorn message? The top came off. It was hollow. Right, of course. Ha ha. Look for tithe next, okay? As far as I know, it's the sacrifice that makes the fairies that aren't part of any court still do what the court people say. I have to pretend to be human so they can pretend to sacrifice me. He typed in the keyword. I'm just getting Jesus crispy shit. Give 10% of your cash to me so I can buy an air-conditioned doghouse kind of thing. The sacrifice, how safe is that? I mean, how well do you know these people? I trust them absolutely. But, Corny prompted. She smiled ruefully. But they never told me. They knew all this time, and nothing. Not one hint. Kay looked pensively at the joints of her fingers. Why should one extra joint make them horrifying? It did, though. Flexing them bothered her. Corny steepled his palms, cracking his knuckles like a villain. Tell me the whole story again, slowly, and from the beginning. Kay woke up muzzily, not sure where she was. She shifted until she felt a solid shape that groaned and pushed at her. Corny. She squinted at him and rubbed at her eyes. It was dark in the room, the only streaks of light sneaking around the edges of the heavy brown curtains. She heard voices from somewhere in the trailer over the distant sound of canned television laughter. She turned over again, trying to go back to sleep. The bedside table was in front of her line of vision. A book, vintage, a bottle of ibuprofen, an alarm clock with flames on the clock face, and a black plastic chess knight. "Corny," she said, shaking what she thought was the shoulder of the lump. "Wake up! I know what to do. I know what we can do." He pushed the covers back from over his head. His eyes were slits of wet in the piles of comforter.
"This better be good,"
he groaned. "The Kelpie! I know how to call the Kelpie!" He pushed back the covers and sat up, suddenly awake. "Right! That's right!" He slid out of bed, scratching his balls through once white briefs, and sat down in front of the computer. The screensaver dispersed as he shook the mouse. In the hallway, Kay could hear Janet's voice distinctly, complaining to her mother about the fact that she wasn't going to get her license if Corny didn't let her borrow his car. "What time is it?" Kay asked. Corny looked at the clock on the screen. "After 5. "Can I use your phone?" He nodded. "Do it now. You can't use it while I'm signed on. We only have the one line." Corny's bedroom phone was a copy of the emergency bat phone, bright red and sitting under a plastic dome on the floor. It even had a little bulb in it that she imagined might blink when a call came in. Kay sat down cross-legged on the floor, took off the dome, and dialed her house.
"Hello?"
Kay's grandmother answered. "Grandma?" She dragged her fingers over the synthetic loops of the rug she was sitting on. Her eyes fell on her long green toes with chipped red nail polish on the jagged, untrimmed toenails.
"Where are you?"
"I'm at Janet's," Kay said, wiggling the toes, willing herself to realize they belonged to her. It was hard talking to her grandmother now. The only reason her grandmother put up with her and Ellen was because they were family, and you always took care of family.
"I just wanted to tell you where I am."
"Where were you this morning?"
"I got up early," Kay said. "I had to meet some friends before school started."
That was true enough, in a way.
"Well, when are you coming home, then?" "Oh, and I have 2 messages for you. Joe, from the Amico, called about some job. I hope you're not thinking of working at a gas station. And some boy named Kenny called twice."
"Twice?" Kay couldn't help the smile that was pushing up the corners of a mouth she was determined to keep grim.
"Yes. Are you coming home for dinner?"
"No, I'll eat here," Kay said. "Bye, Graham. I love you."
"I think your mother would like it if you came home for dinner. She wants to talk to you about New York."
"I've got to go. Bye, Graham." Kay hung up the phone before her grandmother could start another sentence. "You can sign on now," she said. A few minutes later, Corny made a noise. She looked up.
"Your plan has one little problem."
"Don't they all?" "No, tell me, what is it?"
"Kelpies basically like to drown people and then eat most of them, all but their guts. You're not supposed to get on their backs, yada yada yada, they're fucking evil as hell, yada yada yada, not to mention they shapeshift. Oh yeah, you can tame them if you happen to manage to get a bridle on them. Fat chance of that."
"Oh.
Did you ever wonder if some of these sites were designed by fairies? I wonder if I kept looking if I could find a news group or a hub page or something."
"So, if we don't sit on its back, are we safe?"
"Huh? Oh, I don't know."
"Well, are there instances there where it drowns people without them getting on its back?"
"No, but then it's not all that comprehensive."
"I'm going to try it. I'm going to talk to it." He looked up from the computer desk.
"You're not going without me."
"Okay," Kay said. "I just thought that it might be dangerous."
"This is the real thing," he said, voice dropping low. "And I don't want to miss even one little bit of it. Don't even think of running off."
She held up both hands in mock surrender. I want you to go with me, really, okay? I don't want to wake up someplace with a screwed-up memory and nobody ever believing me. Do you understand? Corny's face was flushed. Come on, Corny. Either your mom or Janet is going to hear you and come in here. I'm not leaving you. Kay watched as he calmed somewhat, thinking that she should stop trying to anticipate what was going to happen next. After all, when you were already in a slippery place, reality-wise, you couldn't afford to assume that things would be straightforward from here on in. The metal of the car made her feel heavy and drowsy and sick, the way that carbon monoxide poisoning was supposed to make you feel before it killed you. Kay rested her cheek against the cool glass of the window. Her throat was dry, and her head was pounding. It had something to do with the air in the car, which seemed to scald her lungs as she breathed it. It was a short drive, and she was glad of it, practically tumbling out of the car when Corny opened the door for her. In the daylight, it was easy to see rows of houses beyond the trees, and Kay wondered how it could have seemed like a great woods when she had stumbled through here. The stream, when they found it, was thick with garbage. Corny leaned down and smeared dirt off a brown bottle that didn't look like it was for beer. It looked like it should be holding some snake oil salesman's hair tonic or something. Vaseline glass, he said. Some of this stuff is really old. I bet you could sell some of these. He pushed another bottle with his toe. So, how do we call this thing? Kay picked up a brown leaf. Do you have anything sharp? He reached into his back pocket and pulled out a pocket knife, flicking it open with a deft movement of his thumb. Just remember what the sight said. No getting on its back. No way, no day, no matter what. I saw the page, okay? You don't have to keep reminding me. Kelpie equals evil water horse that drowns people for fun. I get it. Well, just so you're sure. He let her take the knife. She slid the tip of it into the pad of her thumb. A bright dot of blood welled up, and she smeared it on the leaf. Now what? He asked. But for all that the words sounded cynical, he was barely breathing as he spoke them. She dropped the leaf into the stream, blood sighed down as she had done before. I'm Kay, she said, trying to remember the words. I'm not from any court, but I need your help. Please hear me. There was a long moment of silence after that when Corny let out his breath. She could see him start to believe that nothing was going to happen, and she was torn between the desire to prove that she knew what she was doing and the fear of what was coming. A moment later, there was no more doubt as a black horse rose from the water. Either because it was day, or with Kay's new sight, the creature looked different. Its color was not so much black, but an emerald so deep that it looked black, and the nacreous eyes were gleaming like pearls. Still, when it regarded Kay, she was forced to think of the research Corny had done. That was chilling enough. The Kelpie strode onto the shore and shook its great mane, spraying her and Corny with glittering droplets of swamp water. Kay held up her hands, but it hardly helped.
What do you seek?
The horse spoke, its voice soft but deep. Kay took a deep breath.
I need to know how to glamour myself, and I need to know how to control my magic. Can you teach me?
What will you give me, girl child?
What do you want?
Perhaps that one would like to ride on my back. I would teach you if you let him ride with me.
So that you can kill him? No way!
I wonder about death, I who may never know it. It looks much like ecstasy, the way they open their mouths as they drown. The way their fingers dig into your skin. Their eyes are wide and startled, and they thrash in your hands as though with an excess of passion.
Kay shook her head, horrified.
You can hardly blame me. It is my nature. And it has been a very long time.
I'm not going to help you kill people.
There might be something else that would tempt me, but I can't think what. I'll give you the opportunity to think up something.
Kay sighed.
You know where to find me.
With that, the Kelpie waded back into the water. Corny was still sitting stunned on the bank.
That thing wanted to kill me.
Kay nodded.
Are you going to try to find something it wants?
Kay nodded again.
Yeah. I don't know how I feel about that.
You read the site. You knew it would be like this.
I guess. It's different to see it. To hear it.
Do you want us to leave?
Hell no.
Any ideas what it might want that doesn't walk on 2 feet?
Well, he said, after a moment's consideration. Actually, there are a whole lot of people I wouldn't mind feeding to that thing.
She laughed.
No, really, he said.
What do you mean?